Welcome to MLB Daily, your one-stop shop for daily baseball content. I am LJ LaFura. Back alongside me, I've got Brandon Karam, and we are a Belly Up Sports podcast. We are what they aren't, and we are here vibing with you because you are vibing with us. Brandon, how you doing?
Good. First in-person episode in a few weeks.
2 weeks.
2 weeks. Was it really only 2 weeks ago? Wow.
Well, yeah, because it was right before Trey McGinn was the last time we did it. We've done it since I got back from Florida.
Right. Okay. I was out this weekend, had a friend up from college, very fun. But now we're back at it. LJ, I got 17 days before I move into school. And it's power rankings once again.
It's power rankings day.
Our 15th iteration of our power rankings this year. I'm excited. We can get right into it because any stories we need to cover, we can just go team by team. LJ, let's get the easy part out of the way and rip through our bottom five.
Yep. Going with bottom five, we've got unanimous once again for now. Is that what? Two straight weeks, unanimous. Bottom team, the Washington Nationals. They, of course, we'll talk about them in a second. 29 A's, 28 Tigers, 27 Reds, and 26 Cubs.
Yeah, you know, it's, and I apologize for the phone ringing, but it's gotten to the point where this bottom five has pretty much solidified itself. Barring some massive run that one of these teams goes on, I find it hard to believe we're going to be mixing up, you know, these teams too much. My bottom five, Nationals at 30, A's 29, Tigers 28. We actually agree in order, 28 through 30. I've got Kansas City at 27 and Pittsburgh at 26. I mean, no real stories here. I think the Nationals, the last time we recorded this, they had not traded away Josh Bell and Juan Soto.
This is our first power ranking since the trade deadline.
What I can say, the Nationals got significantly worse. They were already number 30, but I think that they got significantly worse. I don't know if you saw the clip of Luke Voit the other day, LJ. It was like one of his first games playing with the Nationals. Whoever their shortstop is, threw the ball. He was trying to throw it across the infield. Threw it, like, into the dugout, way up the line, way past Luke Voit. He just kind of turns around and is like, what the hell? Like, what are you doing? He must hate Eric Hosmer so much, LJ, huh?
Oh, yeah. You know, it's hard not to at this point, and I feel like I go into that if I'm Luke Voit. In a very strong place of conflict, because this isn't 2020 Luke Voit. Like, the weight of that name has significantly declined. So, reasonably, if he doesn't have a good tenure in Washington, he already had a very forgettable tenure in San Diego.
After a rough end with the Yankees.
It's hard to see him staying major league relevant with a bad stint in Washington. However, from his perspective, you go from a top 10 team to the worst team, it's very hard to mentally commit yourself to this group. He is probably trying with all of his might not to check out right now.
After you were not even supposed to be on that team, like, up until the last second.
Yeah.
Yeah, you weren't even supposed to leave nice and sunny San Diego.
And to give it even, to extend even farther, he was supposed to be on the team who, for most of the season, had been the best team in the league going into the year.
Yeah.
So, it's just a constant state of disappointment for them. But, Brandon, I do have to ask this before we get too far, a little more of a methodology question. How did the trade deadline affect your power rankings so far? Did they play a role?
Yeah, for a few teams, you know, obviously we have so much of a body of work now from all these teams that we know what teams are good and what teams are not, and it's no longer looking forward to see what they can do, but looking back on what they have done. And it changed a little. I mean, I don't really think, like, there was so many teams that went out and made additions, as always, that it's hard to really say that a team...
29, actually.
Well, everyone except the Rockies. Yeah, but at least, like, big needs, like, the contenders, the teams that were moving around a lot, kind of that, like, 5 to 15 range. No one really was far and away the best team. Sure, some teams made amazing moves, but I don't think anyone was really so much a step ahead, at least in terms of this season. For the future, that can be completely different, but... You know, the purpose of these power rankings is how we see these teams right now. For me, it's you know, kind of like a predictive rating, how I think the teams look if you were going to crown a World Series champion. To answer the question, make a long answer, not much change, but it certainly created some interesting storylines that could change these power rankings.
Yeah, the first thing I decided before I even went to look at this list was that I was completely disregarding everything that happened in the trade deadline for this. Not because it doesn't change team states, we just don't know how it's changed team states yet.
It's been 6 days.
It's been
right?
six days, but more so the perfect case study for this is a man named Joey Gallo, and not trying to kick a guy while he's down, both Joey Gallo or Brandon, because we're going to talk a lot more Yankees today, but you can't tell me I'm wrong with this. There was an all-star that the Yankees traded for last year, should have been a crucial part of this team for years, and he comes up more than flat, I guess I would say. I don't even know what word to go with. So horrifically goes below expectations that they have to go out and seek out his replacement and get rid of him a year directly after getting him. And so that could happen with any number of these guys. I'm not saying it's going to happen with Juan Soto, but you don't know what he's going to bring to the Padres yet.
I would hope not. I would be so sad.
But you don't know what he's going to bring yet. If their presence on that team has not led to wins and losses yet, it doesn't matter.
Not a Padres podcast, by the way, also.
Not a Padres podcast either, no. Even though both of our stories so far have...
involved the Padres. And that's why, well, when we first started the show, that's why we started making the joke, because within the first 2 weeks of starting the show, the Padres Blake Snell and Yu Darvish and Joe Musgrove.
You know what? AJ Preller's going to trade this team into irrelevancy soon enough, so we're not going to have to worry about that anymore.
Well, my 25 through 21 in the rankings: Diamondbacks at 25, Rockies 24, Cubs 23, Reds 22, and the Angels at 21.
All right, going through that next stretch, we've got the Diamondbacks at Rockies at 25, Royals at 24, Angels at 23, Rangers at 22, Pirates at 21. Glad to see where you put the Phillies up on this list, but I believe that makes them the most argued about team on this list in terms of average finish.
Well, the Pirates, that is. Yes, because you have them 21, I have them 26. Yeah, I mean, we were kind of talking about this prior to the show. I'm not a fan of a team that gets blown out a lot, and that, unfortunately, is the Pittsburgh Pirates. Sure, you go for every year. All right, and I was saying this too. Let's say from, like, 2015 on, you can create a year of MLB highlights and, like, the best walk-offs of the year, the best plays of the year. The Pirates are going to be on that list way more than some other teams that won way more games than them for whatever reason. They just... crazy plays and crazy ends to games always seems like it starts and ends with Pittsburgh. However, there's just not been a winning product out there for several years now. And I can't justify them being like any higher than 26. I don't know. And what LJ is going to say, or I'll let you take it away, because I already know what you're going to say.
Look, run differential, as much as it helps you in the postseason in judging the full extent of things and the direction that your team is headed, yes, a Pythagorean win-loss percentage can help.
Mm.
At the end of the day, it doesn't do anything in the middle of the season. A 1-0 win and a 12-0 win mean the same thing. A 1-0 loss and a 12-0 loss mean the exact same thing. At the end of the day, it does come down to record. This is a 44-win team. They may have lucked
this
into
is a 44-win team. You say that with such
this
authority.
This is a 44-win team. It's not that easy to do that in early June. Okay?
Oh, we have now teleported 2 months into the past here.
Look,
Pirates fans certainly wished it. They had 44 wins to start June. Are you kidding me? They would be selling their soul this summer to make the playoffs.
I guess really the only thing I have to defend is the teams below it, which I just think generally have been more pathetic and disappointing.
A lot of really pathetic teams this year in the majors. More than last year, for sure. Last year there was I don't know, 4 or 5. Like, this year, this whole bottom 10 of the rankings just feels like none of these teams stand a chance.
I mean,
it's so top and bottom heavy this year, I feel.
I wouldn't even say top and bottom heavy. I just think there's a gap between the top and the middle and the bottom.
So it's like three tiers of teams. It's like the top 10, the next 10, and then the bottom 10.
Like, I can find ways to make the top 17 redeemable.
Yeah.
Anything below that, I can't.
Intentionally leaves.
Intentionally leaves Boston off, but we're gonna get there.
We're gonna get there. It's actually hilarious. LJ's about to just go off about the Red Sox. I can't wait.
Where was I?
You were saying you could make
redeemable
point for the top 17.
The top 17. Anything past that, it's just been a very, very rough scene. And even more so for the teams I ended up putting below the Pirates, because you look at the talent that was there, the expectations that were there, and the way that I can't remember the Rangers coming up big in a single series this year. I can't remember the Angels.
I'm about to fact check this, but I remember there was a Rangers-Rockies series like that first weekend. I want to say the Rangers didn't play. Actually, no, I think the Rockies might have swept them. I don't know. I'm going to fact check it.
Because I'm also going to hit you with this one. You are talking about the 22 versus 25 matchup on my list.
Oh, it's beautiful.
So, where did they show up? Honestly, the Pirates have put together a good series against good teams.
Nope, lost both games, of course. There you go. Lost them both.
Even if they aren't winning, they're able to stick out these things against decent teams, which makes them a significantly larger threat than the Rangers are, no matter how much more talented they are, than the Angels are, no matter how much more talented they are. The fact they're able to put those series together for me. But, yeah.
All right. Well.
Also, I mean, looking through the rest of these, Angels, total disappointment. Royals, I don't know what I was expecting from them. Just this wasn't it.
No, I actually think that this is a good week to kind of look back at where we started with the rankings from to now, post-trade deadline. Yeah, Angels, huge disappointment. White Sox are still a big disappointment. We're going to get to them.
I don't know what I was expecting out of Kansas City, but it's just the most, this is another team that they've been quiet the entire season because there hasn't been a single good thing to celebrate.
Well, yeah, but this is what happens when... And look, I love their ownership. They actually have some of the better small market ownership. But them insisting on not ever wanting to rebuild, officially rebuild, has now brought them to this where it was two or three bad years, and now you're starting to rebuild.
Sucks. With that, and the fans would be fine with that too, because there's a level of loyalty and all of that.
Right. No, I know, absolutely, and that's why I think that that their ownership does the fans quite good. But a few years ago, because LJ, if they started that rebuild 2 or 3 years ago, it'd be looking a lot better now. They just kind of delayed it a little bit by trying. They were trying to delay the inevitable, which we could all see coming.
Yeah, I don't know. I guess my point is, this Royals team, I think, is better than some of the Orioles teams we've seen in the past couple of years, some of the Pirates teams in the last couple of years, and yet they have far fewer memorable results and memorable stretches where it's like, you know, the Orioles have had their good stretches of games against like the Yankees or somebody like that over the last couple of years where it's like, oh, this team, you know, they've got some good pieces here. This team has better pieces than those teams actually had. They just haven't put anything together this year and is disappointing. And I mean, the Rockies are still a non-factor. I mean, their IL this year probably has more war than the Nationals, but it's
You know, LJ, it's amazing. The Rockies, you know, say Coors all you want. Coors doesn't make you have the second best team batting average. It just doesn't. I mean, it'll jump you up five spots, but they have like a legitimately good offense this year. There's guys that are legitimately good. It's the same problem year after year. Look at this pitching. Look how sad this is, LJ. I cannot believe Senzatella is still around and he's only 27. I have been watching this guy pitch for the Rockies for years, LJ.
4 years?
No.
Because he's got only, 4 years of service time.
Is it 4 years? It's been forever. And it's like, he clearly isn't it. Dude, between Germán Márquez, Kyle Freeland. Dude, they got Jose Ureña. Isn't that the guy that like was getting into it with Acuña a few years ago because he intentionally hit him? Like, yeah. That's the only thing I know about this guy. Like, something's wrong. But look,
well,
enough
with
this. I can't with the Rockies. That just makes me mad to look at this.
But it's so weird because like the philosophy change of it all too, because they're the second best average hitting team this year. That wasn't where they at all were last year. They were a pure fly ball power group except for Raimel Tapia.
Slamming it into the ground every plate appearance.
So yeah, it's just a complete shift from them. And it's probably the right shift, seeing how horrible their home road splits were this year. And I don't actually know what those are this year. Let me try to find that real quick. Home, they are 30-27, 18-36 on the road. So it's still bad, but I just feel like, you know, the more we get into the launch angle era, the more we get into the exit velocity era, it just bodes worse and worse for Colorado in baseball.
And they have been a significantly better hitting team. When you're talking total team OPS plus, want like a jump in just even 1% is a lot more impactful, would you say, because it's representing the whole team, right?
Yeah.
Rockies went from 87 last year as a team to 96 this year. So you're talking about an offense that's been almost 10% more effective at driving in runs over the course of the full season. So, look, they're clearly doing something right offensively there. It's the pitching that's always been an issue. But we got to keep moving. I'm going to rip through 20 through 16. Rangers, Marlins at 19, Red Sox at 18, Giants at 17, and Orioles at 16. I guess the one team I want to talk about here before LJ talks about the Red Sox, San Francisco. You talked about the most disappointing teams. They're now two games under 500, LJ. They are, you know, you don't, yes, I understand that they lost some really key pieces off their roster last year, but you added Rodon, who's been a stud pitching. Logan Webb has been outstanding. He took another step forward. The rest of your starting staff isn't bad. You've still got some of these names in the bullpen, like Camilo Doval, who you've loved. And just such a significant underperformance by this offense.
Yeah, but is it entirely? Are we really going to play on the offense here? Because this is
the
ninth most runs in the league.
No, I know, but I mean, you have to draw the line somewhere. I'm looking at a lineup right now where there's not a lot of guys that I'm comfortable with. Lamont Wade, it's been rough.
And keep in mind, you only have one starter that's on the IL right now.
Yeah, no, so. LJ, I don't know. I just look up and down this lineup. There's not a lot that's really appealing to me. And you know how much we love Brandon Belt, but he's been struggling a little.
Yeah, that's, you know, but that's kind of what you have to accept and take when you have such a veteran-centric team like the Giants, where you're in a position that you kind of have to take what you're going to get. You're going to have these inconsistencies, and at some point this whole thing is going to come crashing down. But it's certainly I would rather see this whole situation where they barely missed the playoffs in 2020, they win the division in 2021, they miss the playoffs, and they're like a fringe wild card team in 2022, and then all of a sudden we start looking into rebuild. Then I would have with them rebuilding starting in 2020,
and you know,
like that easily looked like their track plan going into that 2019-2020 area was to move on and start a rebuild. All of a sudden they have that good stretch to end 2020, and that wasn't the case anymore. I'd much rather embrace that stretch than this, than not.
And, you know, I just want to do a little surface-level research. So, as a team, LJ, they have a 100 OPS plus, okay? ERA plus, as a team, they have a 104. So, if they're an average-hitting team and an above-average total pitching team, it's like, you know, where can you really draw the line? At some point, it's like if you're an above average pitching team, which this shows, then you're just not producing enough runs for them, is kind of how I see it. And look, ninth most runs scored is great, but let's not get, you know, too carried away with where a team specifically ranks for a counting stat. Just because teams have played different amounts of games, it also is kind of like run a differential in a way, you know. So, I mean, with runs being the main component, but yeah, you know, just a team that I hate to, for, and I'm sure you do, to have to rank them, you know, not in the top half, but there's just a lot of teams that I'm more confident in.
Yeah, this is a group that they are not a top half team, but like the variance of their talent can easily put them back in that top half.
They can
next
have a
year.
Week where they look like a top 10 team in the league, or a week where they're not good.
Or I'm even meaning longer term.
Oh yeah.
It wouldn't shock me to have them be a top 10, top 8 team next year, like with the right moves.
Their year to year variance is actually incredible. It's unbelievable.
Tracking back to that comment about the Rockies, unfortunately, I was wrong. Chris Bryant does not have more WAR than the Nationals. The only player in the league with more WAR than the Nationals right now is Aaron Judge.
Okay, so the Nationals have like 5-something more.
They have 6.4 on their entire team.
That's pitching, or
that's the,
sorry,
that's
pitchers.
The entire roster.
Everyone
has 6.4 WAR.
Oh boy. Okay, so what you're telling me is it's just basically a Triple-A team that they've been sending out there. Yeah,
pretty much.
Because that's what a replacement level player is. It's like a quadruple A player. So, yeah. All right, LJ. Red Sox. I moved them down two spots from 16 to 18. You said earlier you can make a redeeming point about every other team except for them. Well, pretty much, no. Well, the top 17, and we both have the Red Sox at 18. Take it away. What isn't redeeming anymore? What was redeeming that now isn't? Why do you feel this way, LJ?
Honestly, it's mostly me being pissy, but it's just gotten to the point where these games are just not watchable baseball anymore. You know, you go out and you have clear holes on this team, and you sacrifice a little bit of the life of this team and the feeling of this team to bring in a whole bunch of new faces to try to fix that, but it's the most bargain brand fixes that you possibly could have asked for. So, you know, I don't think this team necessarily got that much better at the deadline. We were talking about this earlier on the phone, where it's like, I don't think it was a bad time, but it certainly wasn't a great time, and it just feels like this last month, really since the beginning of July, has just, somebody took a machete and stabbed through all of the tires of the Red Sox, and they're just still trying to drive. They're still trying to. Heim Bloom's in the driver's seat, sticking his head out the window, saying, "Don't worry, guys, we're making the playoffs. Don't worry, we're still going." But it just looks worse and worse by the day. It you don't understand how humiliating it looks to be the only team below 500 in a division that includes the Baltimore Orioles. Like, this was supposed to be one of the worst teams in the league.
Yeah.
And
LJ, what I can tell you is, Baseball America dropped a new top 100 prospects list. Red Sox actually got a new top 100 guy who was not previously in the top 100. Not sure if you saw Sedan Rafaela was like 84th or something, and that's, you know, you already have. I'd have to assume all four of these guys are still top 100 prospects. Tristan Casius, Marcelo Mayer, Brayan Bello, and Nick York. And to get another guy who, what I was reading on Red Sox Twitter today, there's a lot of confidence in what he's been doing. And, you know, hopefully 2024 he can make an impact. But for to have another player crack that top 100, and this is, I don't know, they're saying third base, outfield. He's probably going to be a corner outfielder, it looks like. But, I mean, it's got it's a little confidence, you know. You got another top 100 prospect, naturally.
It'll last us for a good 6 years.
And then
7 years.
And then it'll get traded.
Then they
got to
ship him out before the arb years are all over.
Yeah, well, no, because LJ, you know, if you see numbers on the screen saying, oh, well, the Red Sox is a team. Hey, LJ, you know, if we, as a team, we only need to get this much war, it doesn't matter what players' names we have.
No.
What names are on the team.
It doesn't
team.
Matter what's going on in the clubhouse as long as the numbers come.
Sounds awfully Tampa Bay Ray-ish, huh? Just awfully like the Rays. Okay.
It's a cruel world. Dennis Eckersley announced his retirement.
Yeah, like, come on. You're making Eckersley, this poor guy. All right.
You're giving him, you're
it's
giving
ridiculous.
Him the high cheese to his career, and it's just not something I want to see right now.
Well, let's talk about the top half of our rankings, which now somehow includes the Chicago White Sox for both of us at 15. I've got the Guardians at 14. We both have the Phillies at 13. Got the Rays at 12 and the Twins at 11.
I've got the White Sox at 15, Rays at 14, Phillies at 13 with Brandon, the Guardians at 12, the Blue Jays at 11. Anywhere in particular you want to start? Phillies are not as good as their record. We've kind of exhausted that to death.
Yeah,
despite a very good trade deadline.
Yes, they are 27-29 against teams that are better than 500. They won five in a row. They actually have looked really good. And they play good on the road. That's what saved them. They're 30-23 on the road. But actually at home, they are five games above 500. But compared to what some of the other like best teams in the league and other teams that have similar win totals to them, they're not nearly doing enough at home. Yeah,
now, let's look through, and just to be reasonable here, look at the playoff picture.
Yeah.
Let's lock it. We'll lock in the Dodgers and the Mets. The Phillies are going to end up being the number two wild card. Odds are playing the Mets.
Are we locking in the Padres for the number one wild card as well?
I was going to lock in Atlanta. I think Atlanta's the better team still.
So are we – okay, so hold on. Let me pull up this wild card.
I'm just doing it by the wild card standings from that point.
Let me pull it up. Okay, so – oh, okay. I didn't even realize San Diego's now the number three wild card.
Yeah.
Okay, so yeah, they really sold. They really sold this weekend. So, Jesus.
Or 61-50.
If they don't even make the playoffs, oh, my God. Okay, well, yes, okay. Atlanta, I think you can definitely lock in. They are making this the playoffs no matter what, LJ.
100%.
Atlanta's locked in, even with their tough weekend. They had to face Jacob DeGrom yesterday. They get a pass. Philly, been super hot lately. Do we really think they're going
to get super cold?
Loves to get super cold at the worst of times.
The only team I can think of that likes to get super – all right, I can think of two teams. The Blue Jays also like to get super cold. And the Angels like to get cold so much that they just stay there.
So
if we're talking the ceiling for Philly, The floor, of course, would be they're not making the playoffs because we still have
the Brewers.
The Brewers
who have decided to get cold at the worst possible time. The Brewers,
you know, just casually trade the best closer in the league, and all of a sudden can't finish things out. Not entirely sure what happened there. Like,
what do you know? You trade the best closer in the league, you immediately go downhill, and your division rival, who you've been battling with, rips off 7 in a row. Huh?
Weird.
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 Weird. Super weird.
But yeah, so reasonably, San Diego and Milwaukee will be competing for that bottom spot. Philly could be the 2 seed. They could easily be that last man out. If they're the 2 seed, they're playing the Mets. Do we have any realistic idea? They might get a game off of. They'll get a game just because that's the way the Mets operate.
In that 3-game series, you think they're going to get one?
Oh, wait, it's a 3-game.
It's a 3.
No.
If they get one game, they could damn win that thing, you know?
Yeah, that's not happening.
And if the Mets... Dude, that's what's so... Well, no, it would be... that's right. I hate this stupid wild card system. Why did we add another
wild card? I still like my 3-team wild card.
No, LJ's is way... LJ's... We're going to make a whole show. We're just breaking that down. We got to implement that. But, LJ, I can tell you, we got to keep rolling on these power rankings. Anyone else other than the Phillies here you wanted to talk about?
Yes. Do I remember who it was? No. Oh, Rays.
Wow. What's going on in Tampa?
What's going on in Tampa?
Have a whole laundry list of injured players, though.
They still have a laundry list of injured players, yet if they have a laundry list of injured players, why are they still well within this postseason hunt? It just continues to amaze me.
Did you see they... They had a first yesterday, the Rays, in their game.
Yeah.
They did something that has never been done in over 200,000 MLB games.
Okay, so it's not shifting on somebody.
No. For just the second time in recorded baseball history, they went all the way back to the beginning of the league. A team has scored 7 runs in the 9th inning after scoring 0 runs through their first 26 outs of the game. Wow. There was 2 outs in the 9th inning and they had 0 runs. And they ripped off 7 in the top of the 9th to win 7-0.
Unbelievable. But what I was going to bring up with them is the thing that makes them really actually a legitimate threat, no matter how bad their offense looks right now in the postseason. And that's the fact that reports are coming out. Tyler Glasnow's healthy.
That would make sense.
He is within weeks of throwing to batters again. And where that reasonably will put him is mid-September return. Bullpen work. How do you handle that? How does another team handle that? Because every single way I look at it, it becomes very scary. First off, you can easily put him into your rotation of closers, of higher leverage role guys, and it's just going to make that group even scarier, even deeper.
Kind of like Severino returning last year for the Yanks. Yep. I mean, it was like he came back and we were using him. I remember a few of those series against Boston late in the season. LJ, we were having him pitch like the 7th and 8th inning in those really big games that we needed to win to stay in the wild card race.
Yep, you've got Posch, you've got Brooks Raley, you've got Jason Adams, you've got Pete Fairbanks back now, which the fact that no one's talking about him being back on this team and still pitching incredibly well is just amazing me at this point. But those 4 on their own, without looking at the rest of this very good group, without looking at the rest of this good rotation, is scary. You add Tyler Glasnow into that group, and you're not going to be able to do anything in the late innings. The other option is you put him there into those situations for now, but all of a sudden, as you build him up, I'm not expecting him to go through a starter's workload for them ever this season, but you can't tell me that throughout, if you treat his major league outings like rehab starts, he can definitely build up by the postseason or at some point in the postseason to where he can be an opener for some of these other guys.
Even like a 2-inning
You give him a once through the order every third game or every other game, that I think is very manageable for this team, and that sets them up so well.
I mean, Tampa knows how to win in the playoffs, and they know how to lose, so.
They definitely know how to lose.
Yeah. All right, where are we? Top 10. Brewers at 10 for me. We spent a lot of time on them. Not a lot of time, but we just talked about them. Mariners at 9. Blue Jays at 8. Cardinals at 7. And the Braves just outside the top 5 for me at 6.
Yep, going through my side, I've got the Twins at 10, Brewers at 9, Mariners at 8, Cardinals at 7, and Padres at 6.
I mean, let's talk Cardinals because they are one of the hottest teams in the league. They jumped up 4 spots for me from last week from 11 to 7. What they did against the Yankees was incredibly impressive this weekend. And Jordan Montgomery looked great in his first start. When they needed to get the bats going on Sunday, they did exactly that. This is a team that has as deep of a lineup as they want to, when they want to, and it's just a really scary team to face, and I feel bad for whoever has to face them in the playoffs. We're also not going to act like... I feel like the general sentiment around the Cardinals fan base is that last season was a failure when it was one wrong pitch in the wild card game. I mean, the game ended 1-0, right? Or 2-1, because Turner had the homer earlier in the game. It was like you lost on a walk-off in the wild card game and you're acting like it was a failure of a season. Sure, we weren't picking them to win the World Series, especially come at this point in the year, but when they ripped off 16, 17 wins in a row, whatever it was, you could tell that there's clearly something special with this group. And I just think that now this was kind of a little bit of a coming out party for them to say, hey, we should be considered a part of this group of elite teams now in the league.
Yeah, that's part of my big gripes with the American sports model is the fact that if you don't win this great ultimate championship, your whole season was pointless, that you're some great loser, because there's so many other ways and very valuable ways that you can look and find major positives and find a major building success. And that's exactly what that was. That was proving that this core of Cardinals has enough in them to be contenders, soon. They're not perfect, because if they were perfect, they would have been doing stuff like they did in August and September throughout the rest of the season, yeah. Right? But that gave them a glimpse of what they can be, and it really should have been respected more as that. And they continue to show it once again. I never really thought, as much as people complained about the numbers, they complained about that lineup, you know, they were in on everybody because it felt like they had a million needs. It never felt like a bad team to me. I don't even know where the lowest I was that I put them, but...
Yeah, I don't ever think I dropped them too far. I see I had them 11, week 11... Week 10, they were 8. I've had them up at 7. They've never been too high, but they've never also dropped low for me either. What will be a cool thing to do after we do our very last power rankings to end the regular season, we'll look at the variance between teams. What was a team's highest? What was their lowest? Stuff like that.
The Cardinals started at 5. The lowest they've ever fallen for me is 8.
They started at 4 for me, yeah. I think the lowest they've been is 11. Super, super impressive. So consistent. All right, top 5. I've got the top 5 at 5. I've got the Padres at 5. Obviously, they made the biggest trade of the week with Juan Soto. Still trying to hit their stride, though. They got swept by the Dodgers this weekend. So they had won 5 in a row previously, and now they've lost 4 in a row. However, the potential of a lineup with Soto, Machado, and Tatis, who's on his rehab assignment right now, that's enough to keep the Padres in the top 5 for me. Number 4, we're going with the Mets.
There for a little bit? We'll just go through.
Oh, perfect.
Like that. I did want to talk about the Padres because, you know, that Dodgers series just again proves, you know, maybe this was a little too much too fast for this team, because you did a lot here. But does anyone still think that they are as deep as the top level of teams? I mean, it flat out got proven when they just got outclassed by the Dodgers that this lineup isn't deep enough. The rest of this team as well. It just isn't all there for them to be able to do this type of thing.
Yeah, I mean, we only disagree by one team here. And, I mean, if you want to talk about who you have at five, because that's who I have at six, we have them flipped.
The Braves. I mean, this team, top to bottom, just looks solid. If they're when they're not playing the Mets, they just have constantly looked good.
I think the same with the Padres when they're not playing the Dodgers, honestly. Because they've struggled with the Dodgers this year tremendously.
Yeah, I don't know. Again, I just look at this group, and I feel comfortable with 8 out of the 9 starters.
Yeah,
like,
no.
Quite easily, I feel comfortable with that entire rotation. I mean, you know, you're sending down good players out of that rotation, too, with Ian Anderson dropping off the roster this weekend. Top to bottom, I just think the whole group is stronger. But the other thing about San Diego is that Fernando Tatis will be playing both short, but he'll also be playing center field. So if he grades out decent for center field with them, as I was saying this weekend, that is a game changer towards depth, not having to take a guy like Ha Seong Kim out of the lineup to get him in there, and you can get rid of just lost production in center field with guys like Trent Grisham and stuff that have just been major disappointments.
All right, number four, I've got the Mets. I mean, they've led the NL East for most of the season. They're looking super dangerous now with Jacob DeGrom back on the mound. They won their 70th game of the year, took 4 out of 5 in that weird extended series against the Braves. If DeGrom and Scherzer stay healthy, it's going to be tough to pick against them in the postseason until you get to the World Series.
No. It's not going to be tough to pick against them, period.
Or I should say until they get to the CS and face the Dodgers.
I still don't think it's going to be tough to pick. But, no, because, like, legitimately...
I'll keep sleeping on the Mets and you can keep sleeping on the Dodgers. Because that's been the main argument for the power rankings every week, it seems like.
What part of this team hasn't been both consistently firing on all cylinders or have potential to be incredible when firing on all cylinders.
I mean,
I'll scream it to the rooftops. This is the most underrated outfield in baseball. They brought in multiple all-stars from that group this year, and still no one is talking about them. I mean, honestly, look, well, really, did you get to see any of the highlights or stuff from yesterday's start from DeGrom?
Oh, it was filth.
It was...
I saw his first 13 sliders were all swings and misses. I've never seen something like that in my life.
Brandon, with the exception of, I believe, two or three pitches, he threw fastball and slider the entire day. He had a perfect game going through five.
Yeah.
Through five, was it 5 2/3?
Then he walked someone, and then it was a Dansby homer, right?
And that's exactly what you expect, right? I was saying last night that the one Nick Pivetta's perfect game that I was there for, in Boston, that's the same way it went. You know, you have the perfect game going, you're focused, you're locked in, all of a sudden you give up that walk, and it's impossible not to think about the no-hitter now. And that's when you leave something, you make a mistake, and it gets sent out of the park. So you can't get too mad about that. But in addition to that, I think one of the three big components of that game was them chasing Spencer Strider in the third. They absolutely tagged him in that inning, and...
Yeah, he was really salty about it too in the post game.
They got away with a horrendous call in the first inning, which could have set up everything. I texted you about it. It was just, you know, they had already lost runs and still were competitive enough to get back in it and absolutely dominate from an offensive perspective. And then you look down to Edwin Diaz and what he's been able to do this season, and I genuinely. You know, there is no other pitcher other than Jacob DeGrom who, you know, I kind of feel comfortable saying is the best player in baseball. Like, given his context, because, you know, you're not going to be able to put up the counting stats and the war like Mike Trout can when you're a pitcher and only going every fifth day. So
he's probably the most dominant, like the most, I have the most confidence in him to perform to his true ability on any given day. Yeah,
absolutely. That too. Sure. And so, you know, if there was anyone else on the mound, Edwin Diaz would have been the best player to go on the field today. that day. What he did in that ninth inning, you know, it keeps getting, you know, swept under because he keeps doing it time and time again. But one inning, three strikeouts, absolute heat. And it's just, there's something so imposing about that brand of baseball that he's locked into right now, where it's, I'm going to love my fastball, I'm going to use my fastball, and I'm more than willing to bet that your bat's not going to beat my ball to the zone. Mm. Like, he's willing to try to overpower every single person, and it works every time. And, you know, I don't see it. I don't see a bad thing about this team.
Well, I have the Mets 4. Then my top 3 remains the same from last week. Astros, Yankees, and Dodgers at the top.
I've got almost the same group. I've got, of course, Astros 4, Yankees 3, Dodgers 2, Mets 1. Yankees are the only team to move in this grouping. They switch with the Dodgers 2 and 3. Brendan, where would you like to begin on this? Because it's been a tough stretch.
Honestly, I don't want to spend a lot of time on it today because we have gone pretty long. This will be a tomorrow. This will be a tomorrow thing for sure. But, yeah, it was a tough weekend, to say the least. But okay, so that's where I'll leave it.
Yeah.
But that's going to do it for today's show. Thank you for listening. Check us out. Instagram, Twitter, TikTok, at MLB Daily Pod. We'll see you.
See you mañana.